trusty money remains the bedrock of stability. The soul of money is trust.
I think we are not paying sufficient attention to the law of unintended consequences.
In the immortal words of the Doors, the time to hesitate is through.
Fiat is worthless.
How you going, man?
Good, you?
Yeah, pretty good. Recording another episode of Discovering Bitcoin. It's awesome. It's always a pleasure to just chat with random folks around the world who just are drawn like moths to a flame to this this orange protocol that's doing weird things to our lives for the better. It's net benefit, but I appreciate you spending your scarce time, finite energy, telling us the tale of how you discovered Bitcoin. And
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
No, it's my pleasure, man. It's my pleasure. So how did you discover Bitcoin?
Yeah, so it's, I feel like it's almost an embarrassingly long story because
we got time.
I feel like I should have figured this out a lot sooner. I think everybody can empathize with that. So like my background, where I'm from, I grew up in Alberta, Canada. I grew up in a family household that had an outfitting business. So we took American hunters on hunting adventures in northern Alberta. And throughout my whole life, it was always very apparent what the exchange rate from the American dollar to the Canadian dollar was. You know, when the American dollar was strong, you know, we were like going on vacations, and it wasn't like so tied to that, of course, but it was a good year when there was a nice exchange. And then I remember my dad saying, oh, the exchange is par, you know, it's the same. So that was like not as good of a year, right? So like throughout my whole life, like all my peers around me didn't seem to care about what the exchange was unless they're going on holidays, which is like very rarely, right? So that was my intro to like, what is money? It's just this thing. And then the Americans have a different version of it. And then in terms of like, real estate or stocks, the only figurehead in my family was my grandfather on my mom's side. He was really big into real estate, had, you know, flipped properties and had, tenants, and always kind of like preached that, you know, once you get older, you can buy yourself lots of real estate and that's the way to make it in this life, you know. And to be fair, it worked well for him. He retired early and had a ton of respect for him. And then, you know, I turned 16, 17, and then everyone just said, like, go to university. Go get a good education. Go get a good job and work hard, you know. So that's what I did. I went to a place in Edmonton, and I took a program called Construction Engineering Tech. So it's like a construction management diploma. And then the idea is, I don't know if you know much about Western Canada, but we're like really, really energy rich portion of the world. So we have like the oil sands, plenty of natural gas. So everybody says, okay, go get an education. You should be a petroleum engineer. You should become a power engineer. And I chose construction engineering. I thought, well, if that all goes to shit, then maybe I can build a hotel or something. So I thought I was being really smart, but still had that engineering mindset and like to dig deep into things and you know, don't trust, verify attitude. So I found that interesting. So I go into the oil and gas industry and you know, I start working for this company. It's like a heavy, heavy civil earth moving pipelining type company, and I loved it. Loved all my peers. Like, I worked there for like 3 years. Just, you know, I was working like remotely in different working camps, and then all of a sudden, like in 3 years in, you know, I thought I was going to work there for 30 years and retire. You know, that's what you do.
Get the gold watch. Enjoying
it, and then yeah, get the gold watch. Like I was all in, right? I was like, I made it. I was making excellent money for what, like a 20, 21 year old, after I finished college. And then, yeah. And then all of a sudden I heard about this thing called the oil price and it went down and all of a sudden, yeah, all of a sudden that's a pretty big deal. You know, I didn't really care so much when it was $100 a barrel. I was quite happy with that. And then it crashed. And then like one day I went into work and it's just like, yeah, can we speak to you in our office? And yeah, thanks for coming out. And yeah, sorry, the price of oil dipped. And here's your layoff slip.
Oh, fuck.
And I was like, oh, okay.
Did it, was this around the time when it dipped, you know, sub $0? Didn't it go to like negative 30 or something at one point in March 2020? A barrel?
Yeah.
Was this around then?
That was so crazy. No. This is back in like 2014, 2015, I guess.
Okay.
It goes up and down. It booms, it busts, right? And, you know, I thought the good times were going to go forever. My dad told me, he's like, you better be saving. And I was just blowing my money traveling, bought a new truck, like living the high. I had a Harley. Like
the highest of high time preferences. Love it.
Yeah, just an idiot, right? And like we have two summer in Canada and I bought a motorcycle. Like that's the worst of it. So anyway, right before I got laid off the first time, like we were kind of like a seasonal company. So we would work like earthwork. So it's frozen solid in the wintertime. So we would go to like the office and they'd like sit us there and we'd do some like estimating and whatever. And I remember this is my first touch point with Bitcoin. There was a guy named Marty. Don't know what his last name was, but he's just a nice man. Kind of like had like the glasses and kind of like just a nice guy. And he was an equipment trainer. So he was also like laid up in the wintertime. We're all in this like, you know, cubicle setting. And he was like just talking about like, oh, you guys got to invest in this and you got to invest in this. He was like a stock guy. And one day he came in and he's like, you got to get some Bitcoin. He's like, this Bitcoin thing is like, it's taken off. It's going to be the next big thing. And we all just looked at each other and on all of our cubicles and we're like, what an idiot. We're like, hey, Marty, how's that Bitcoin thing doing? Like literally mocking this poor guy. Right. Like, I remember doing a calculation on my phone. I'm like, oh, okay. Like how much money I have saved and what I'm going to get like 10 Bitcoin or 5 Bitcoin. Like what's that? Like I'm only going to get like 10 Bitcoin or something of how much I would have put in right now. It's like, I'm working my ass off just to get like a fraction of that. Right. So it's like, who's
fucking
the
Marty,
right?
Man. Marty, what an Marty's, asshole.
Marty's probably on an island somewhere with a yacht, you know? Yeah. So like, that was my first touch point. It's like, totally from that moment, I just completely forgot about it. Continued, went traveling, went to like 20 countries, like just fell in love with traveling. In 2016, I met my now wife in Riga, Latvia. She was going to medical school there. She's actually Swedish, but I just met her there when I was backpacking. We just like did the long distance thing, totally fell in love with her. And now we're actually getting married this September.
Right on.
But, during that, yeah, thank you. And during all that, I got to move to Latvia, to Riga in the winter of 2018. And, you know, I don't speak Latvian. I don't know anything about Latvia construction market. Like all I know is construction at this point of like oil and gas, none of that in Latvia. And, so I'm like running around trying in the wintertime to find a Latvian job. Like imagine. So
yeah. No,
I'm just like door knocking and it's just not working. And, there's this app called, I don't know if it's a website or an app, but it's called InterNations. And it was like an expatriate group. So they basically host like meetups, right? So like, oh, you're from the US and you're in Riga or wherever you are, you can like make a meetup. And they're doing like these little meetups in coffee shops and like pubs and whatever. So I went to the first one and there was like, I don't know, 20 people at this spot. And I asked every one of them for a job. Like some people are there to like find a date or some people are there to like whatever, build business. And I'm like, hey, like, do you have a job for me? And it was chaos. Didn't work at all. So struck out like 20 times in a row.
Damn.
And then I went to a second. Yeah. Talk about just like rejection after rejection. And so anyway, I had to get a job. You know, I was there and I was there on a work permit. And then they hosted a second one at this cafe. And I did the same thing with, it was a bit smaller, like 10 people. I went there, asked everyone for a job, and none of them had a job for me, right? And there was like a little bar in the corner. It was like a kind of a cafe during the day, like slash little restaurant slash little bar. So I went up to the bar, just like totally frustrated, right? And I went up to the bar. I was like, can I get a double Jack and Coke? You know, like, I need a drink. You know, I was like, a man can only take so much, right? So, you know, the bartender pours me one, and there's a guy behind the bar, this English guy. And he's like, hey, like, that's a pretty strong drink at a meetup kind of thing. And I'm like, yeah, man, I'm trying to find a job and I'm not doing very well, you know? And, he's like, well, what do you do? I'm like, I don't know. I'm in construction management, project management kind of thing. He's like, really? He's like, where are you from? I'm like, I'm from Canada. And he's like, really? He's like, actually, I own a company here in Riga, and we just want a Canadian client, and we need somebody to help like liaison between them and us. And we're having a trouble because we have like all this Latvian / Russian culture in our office. And it'd be great, like a good English speaker to like help communicate. I'm like, yes, you're my new best friend, you know? So awesome. He's like, yeah, it's like totally luck of the draw. So it ended up, I went there on Monday, and, you know, we signed this contract, and it's like in Latvia, I don't know if you know much about Latvia, but like a doctor in Latvia makes like 500 euros, 400 euros, you know, it's tough out there to earn a good wage. Mm-hmm. And this guy's like, yeah, like we'll give you like 1,000 euros a month. I'm like, excuse me, you know? And,
dude, I so used I to like, ride around in a Harley.
Yeah. It was like totally lucky. And like all of my missus friends were like, how did you find this guy? And you don't know anything about this. Like, what does the company do kind of thing? And it turns out he had a few projects on the go. One, he was building a crypto exchange. Right, the Canadian client that he asked me to do wanted to build an MLM scheme that was baseball themed. Excellent. And to operate the MLM scheme, he wanted to build his own cryptocurrency. So I don't know anything about anything
sounds,
I don't even know why
like
he's even hiring
Eastern
me.
European, just standard Eastern European stuff. I don't know. I'm painting with a broad brush here. But it's like,
yeah, totally. And it's so interesting. So like he explained he was there is because like Latvia has like a really good internet connect, like speed in throughout the world. It used to have like one of the highest in the world. So like a lot of like programmers and tech people went to Latvia. Like they really adopted the internet right when it came out and invested in a lot of infrastructure. So there's like really good tech people, really good programmers in Latvia, and then they get paid way less. So he like kind of arbed the labor of like, rather than like opening, he had a location in the UK, but he's like, oh, I'll just hire like really good programmers in Latvia to do this work. So he's like paying them less, and he's like charging the same for the, it was actually pretty smart. That's kind of why I there. Anyway, we start getting into this MLM project, and this guy the guy that's like wants it built is like super sketchy, and he like came to visit from the Philippines. He like lived in the Philippines, and I was like just like going on Skype and like making calls and like passing messages between him and like the people that were like programming upstairs. Anyway, he shows up, and he like shows up in a black pinstripe suit with like a pinstripe vest and like a red tie. And he's like this big, like flamboyant man. He's like, yeah, we're going to make a billion tokens, and it's going to be bigger than Facebook, more than Bitcoin. And he's like, I'm like, holy shit, man. Like, I don't know what you're even talking about. And he's like, sounded like grandiose beyond anything I've ever heard of. So anyway, I don't want to name anything and name people, but he's like super sketchy and whatever. So then I like Google him after he leaves, because I'm like sitting there basically doing nothing at the office, and I Google it. And this guy's like wanted in the UK, wanted in Canada for like scamming all these people out of all these MLM schemes.
Beautiful.
You know, like people put their life savings into there. And like there's a CBC documentary where they interview him for like ripping off all these Canadian people. You can see it on YouTube.
Oh, man.
And I go to tell my boss about it. I'm like, hey, like we should not be doing business with this guy. I thought it was like a really good find. And I like go to my boss and I'm like, yeah, this guy's like a scam artist. And he's like, yeah, you know, like it is what it is. You know, like he, you know, we deal with MLM. We built MLMs before, programs for people like this before. And, you know, it's okay. And I was like, oh, okay. So this is all a scam, right? And you're building a crypto exchange and then crypto is totally a scam. So I like lumped everything in with like what was going on at this office. And like, I was only living in Latvia for like 4 months. I got my three, at that point, it's probably like three little paychecks and got the hell out of there. And yeah. So then that's like my second touch point is like Bitcoin and crypto is a total scam. Don't ever invest in it.
Yeah.
And damn. Then,
It's not going well. You know what I mean? Like some people are fortunate enough to get their first touch point. And they're like, huh, sounds cool. I'll get some. And others are like, yeah, nah, I'm too stupid for that. And then you just like, just the context here, the first two touch points, poor old Marty, he's just trying to do his best, man. He's like every other Bitcoiner, just like, come across the bridge. It's all good. And you're like, fuck you, 10 Bitcoin, what am I going to do with that? And then this guy with his pyramid scheme, it's like, oh, shit.
Yeah, it's brutal. It's like I had every opportunity as well to like follow like Marty down the rabbit hole, like ask him questions and just, you know, people have stuff going on. Like they have family, they have work, they have worrying about the oil price. Like they don't have time to investigate Bitcoin, you know. Like, so I ignored it, and then just like, oh, confirmation that everything's a scam from this guy. And that was it. So that was winter 2018 that happened. Still together with my missus. She finishes school. I moved to Sweden December 2019. So this is like right before the world's about to fall apart from COVID, like beginning of December 2019.
Well, and, just to clarify, the world technically didn't fall apart. Governments reacted like retards and ruined everybody's life. And, you know, that's kind of what happened. Let's just be clear about that. It was their shitty reactions to like a nothing burger.
Yeah, that's a much better description of what
it's
happened.
It's brutal. I'm sorry.
Absolute shit show. Yeah, worth clarifying.
Like the world's fine. The world is fine. The world continues on. The world is always fine. It's been around for 4.5 billion years. We're good. It's these institutions.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Moved to Sweden. Everything shuts. Well, to be fair, it was excellent in Sweden. They're like, oh, we're gonna put in some restrictions, like, oh, you can't be at the bar till 2, you can only be there till like 10. It's like, oh my god, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to live like this. You know. And it was so funny, like people on a Saturday would just like show up at the pub and like start drinking at like 2 in the afternoon. They just started drinking earlier. So
brilliant.
You'd go out, it's like 7 in the evening, and it's like everybody's just hammered.
You see,
already, you know, it's like it's 2 in the morning.
People adapt, man. Yeah. They adapt or die, you know. You're going to cut me off for 2 hours, all right, I'll show up 2 hours earlier, no problem.
That's true. Yeah, it's true. And I moved to Sweden, and, you know, big transition for me. I hadn't really, like, permanently moved abroad. Big language barrier, looking for work. You know, companies, to be fair, they weren't hiring, right? So I would like send in an application, just like denied, just like everybody really threw on the brakes to take chances on new people.
Mm-hmm.
So I was going through that. I don't know. I, you know, my missus said, she's like, go do something you always wanted to do. So I went and I joined like this boxing gym. I'm like really into like UFC, and used to, you know, still watch it with my dad. And I was like, maybe I'll go try this boxing thing out. It's like a kind of like a boxer size, like boxing classes on a heavy bag. And I wasn't doing anything. So I was going in there like, four or five times a week. And eventually the owner's like, you're in here all the time, man. Like, do you, why, you know? And I was like, well, I'm looking for work and I have nothing better to do. He's like, well, what do you want a job here? You know, do you want to lead classes and, you know, show people combinations and turn on like, you know, loud music and do the whole thing? I was like, yeah, sure. You know, that'd be super fun. So I did that during COVID. And then through that gym, I got a job as a teacher's assistant at a high school. There was like kind of like extra money allocated for like COVID support or something. So I was like most brain dead job I've ever had. I mean, I'm still grateful for it, but it was like, I was in a cafeteria, like telling high schoolers to like keep the distance. And like, I don't even help, but like that was my job at the time. So it's like, man, I must really love this Swedish girl because she's making me do some stuff and get some weird jobs.
Well, I was going to say, man, like, you know, she, it seems like she's bought the dip at this point too, by the way, like you guys are about to get married.
Yeah.
She's like all in, like, yeah, go do something you dig instead of like, hang on a minute. You're an engineer, right? Like, why don't you go do some engineering? And you're like, I don't know.
Yeah, it was tough times, but you know, you do what you have to. You know, us Bitcoiners, we just, you know, we're typically hard workers, you know, proof of work. I never wanted to ask for a handout, and I'll go work at a 7-Eleven before I go and collect a check. You know, I don't, that's not below me to go work a job that I'm, you know, minimum wage or something. And that's what I did, you know. So I was working at that school, and at the same time, I was listening to like a lot of Joe Rogan, and you know, it's like a nice, you know, you listen to like Swedish people blah, 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 all the time, all day. I don't understand a lot of it. So I'd like to hear like a friendly voice, right? So I had Joe Rogan podcast on all the time. And he was getting really into like this sauna thing, sauna and cold plunge, right? And so I was like, yeah, there's a sauna house here. And I know her family has been telling me to go, but it's a naked sauna. In Sweden, they sauna naked. So Canadians were not like so into the nudity thing. So I was like, I don't know. My father-in-law is like, do you want to go to the sauna with me? I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know if that's my thing. But it was winter and gloomy. And I was like, you know what? Maybe I'll go try the sauna thing one time. And I got really addicted to it. It's so refreshing, and it takes away my, not like I have anxiety, but like takes away stress and, you know, lightens the mood, and we can jump right into the ocean where I'm located, and it's so nice, right? And I would go in there with my you know, earbuds, and I'd listen to Joe Rogan or listen to podcasts while I was in the sauna. So one day I'm listening to Lex Fridman podcast, because I found out about him through Joe, and I was listening to a lot of his podcasts, and all of a sudden this guy came on there. His name was Robert Breedlove. I don't know if you, I think pretty popular name. And he started talking about like, what is money? And I'm like, what do you mean? What is money? Like, I was just like so interested. And he starts telling about like what money is and how it's like can be created out of thin air, and it's a debt-based system. And like, all of a sudden I just couldn't stop listening, you know. And there was also a Nick Carter episode like right after that, maybe it was before or after, where he like started talking about like Bitcoin's relationship to the energy industry, and like that's what I was in. And it just, I don't know, then, you know, at the end of that episode, I think he mentions like the What Is Money show, right? He like gives a reference. And then I went on there, and there was like three episodes on the What Is Money show, and it was like the first three with Saylor.
Yeah,
he just started at that time the pod, right? And I was like, this guy's a genius, you know. Like, I just every week he would release another one and another one, and it was just like I was all ears, right? And that was like right when I got sucked down the rabbit hole, and I just haven't stopped listening to podcasts. And I've become completely obsessed with Bitcoin.
That's cool, man. That's very cool. And have you phoned Marty and apologized?
I would really love to. Marty, if you're listening, I'm so sorry I didn't listen to you. And I know you can be disappointed at me from your big yacht somewhere. I hope you hodled. That's all I can say.
Yeah. Oh, damn. I mean, that I remember that Breedlove episode. Gee whiz, that was like 21, something like that. And he steps it out, very methodical, very, very methodical, very logical. The extrapolation of the value prop of Bitcoin. It's too bad that Lex didn't get it and still doesn't get it. And I mean, you know, I'm just a humble little podcast here, but God damn it, that man's boring to listen to, Lex Friedman. I just can't do it, man. But his podcast with Breedlove and Saifedean, I think the two of the best that he's done in regards to, if you're going to get exposed to Bitcoin and tolerate his monotone, that's going to probably orange pill you, as you've just kind of pointed out, really.
Yeah, like what disappoints me about Lex Friedman, I think he's a pretty smart guy, but imagine having Saifedean, having Saylor, and having Robert Breedlove and Nick Carter on your podcast and just shitcoining.
Yeah.
Like, I lose for you. Like, come on, man. You don't, I know you're a busy guy or whatever, but if that doesn't get you orange pilled and where you just want to redirect, go away from like the robotic stuff and just focus on Bitcoin, I don't know what will. Like, maybe he will never get it. Like,
I think it's like some sort of cognitive dissonance from like the credentialed class, you know. They're so attached to their credentials. And I mean, like, you know, I don't want to just go down that rabbit hole, but like there's good points about being open-minded, but he's like, his open-mindedness actually is like, I think it's bad for his health or something. I don't know. Anyway.
Well, you know, Jesse Myers has a great piece about the yuppie elite I would classify like someone from MIT like that, who's just like, thinks they have something as simple as money figured out.
Yeah.
And they just can't bring themselves to admit that they were wrong about something that they worked their whole life to acquire. You're so wrong about it that you just cannot say I was wrong. And that's the only time you really can grok Bitcoin, when you admit you're wrong about it, about money, right from the beginning.
Totally. It humbles you. And that's part of the actual pleasure, I think. I know if a lot of Bitcoiners, I think, like to be proved wrong, you know, because it's fun. You get to learn something new. And if you just double down on what it is that you think you know, that just ain't so, well, then that's the shit that gets you in trouble. And it's way more fun to be told that.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's like when I went down the rabbit hole, I remember like sitting there in the sauna and I was like, this can't be right. Like, this can't be true. This is making like too much sense. It's too simple. It must be more complicated than that. There must be more nuance to that. So I just went down like, okay, how can I break this thing? How can I break this logic? And the further I went down the rabbit hole, the more I would try and, okay, bad for the environment. Went down that rabbit hole. This doesn't seem like it's bad for the environment at all. This seems like it's going to build out renewable energy at a global scale. This seems like it's essential to the energy sector. Like, okay, well, that's out the door. It's like, oh, okay, well, it's a scam. Okay, it can be changed. The code can be changed. Like, every single piece of FUD, I just, you know, engineering background, just like, okay, how can I crush this thing? And to this day, I'm still trying to do that, and I just haven't. And if anybody out there can like present a case of why I shouldn't buy Bitcoin or why I shouldn't store my value in Bitcoin, please come it forward, because I would be willing to pay somebody to tell me exactly how I'm wrong, because I don't think that's possible. And I know a lot of other people that think the same way, intelligent people, Michael Saylor caliber people who have thought deeply about this and cannot break the logic.
Yeah.
So either they're all wrong, either Saifedean is wrong, Saylor is wrong, Breedlove type Preston Pish is wrong, Durjiji is wrong, or it's all these other people that don't even know what money is wrong. And I think they're wrong. I think they haven't, either they're benefiting from this corrupt system of fiat money and they don't want to let everybody know that they're wrong. They're not paying attention. And I think we're right and they're wrong. There's that meme. It's like, there's like a whole group of people and one person standing, and the little caption's like, yes, you're all wrong. That's exactly how I feel.
Oh, the closest I've ever got to having my brain shook. Like, so once you have all that calcium or the calcified buildup in your brain just completely smashed away and defragged, and you're on this sort of Bitcoin tip and you're going down the rabbit hole. And as you said, like when you listen to that Breedlove pod or even just start learning about what is money and stuff, and you mentioned like it can't be this simple. And the thing is, it's like, it's not that it's simple, it's intuitive. And you have really no idea about money, the history of money. Most people don't have a clue about economics, like proper economics from a praxeological standpoint, all of these things. But then once you start getting exposed to these ideas, reading more about it, listening to more about it, you start to realize this is really intuitive. Like this makes sense. And I don't know why it makes sense, because I'm not like, I don't have these concepts in my head, but it's easier to put the pieces of the puzzle together when you follow these particular notions and concepts in and around Bitcoin than it is about fiat macro and all of this other stuff and Keynesian economics, because that's the shit that's not intuitive, makes zero sense, but because you're told from on high that it does make sense by like Krugman and Rubini and all these other people, you kind of go, well, I don't know, maybe they're smarter than me, and I guess that is how it works. So you just, and as you said, like people don't have time for this stuff. They're like got families to raise and work to do and oil rigs to set up and so on and so forth. And it's jarring because you're like, hang on a minute, is it just this simple, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like, I think Bitcoin works like how I thought money did work. I thought money was scarce. Like, I didn't even know that we were off the gold standard, or all the countries of the world are off the gold standard. I had no idea. I thought it must be backed by something. It must be some sort of reserve. And in fact, I was speaking with my sister-in-law over Swedish midsummer, and I was kind of explaining to her, I'm like, well, yeah, like it's, you know, assets go up largely in part because there's false demand in the form of like money printing or like digital money printing. And, you know, the money supply is getting expanded drastically, and Cotillion effect like pours that newly created money into assets and they pump. Right. And she just looked at me. She's like, is this some sort of conspiracy theory? I'm like, I just looked at her like, no, this is not a conspiracy theory. She's looking at me like I'm a wacko, which is part true, you know, that we sound like kind of unhinged because we're trying to get, I feel like going to the town square and being like literally a town square and just like holding a sign up, like they're printing money. Yeah. And nobody seems to care.
Nope.
Nobody seems to care. And we're not in their club. There's a club and we're not in it. You know, yeah. Like George Carlin said.
Yeah.
And and I sent her an article, you know, so I went on like how the Fed, you know, creates money, and I sent her this thing. She didn't read it. And I mean, she just had a baby. So she's got, again, other things to think about. But on a long enough time frame, you know, the more these assets get pumped and the more our cost of living goes up and our wages don't follow, the wealth gap in countries around the world is widening between two classes. The middle class is getting pushed to the lower class, and the asset holders and the government people and the people in the central banks are going higher. And
yeah,
it's dividing us, and people don't know why. And they want to say, well, if only my party was elected, then it would be fixed. And they come up with all of these like yes or no, blue, red, dividing issues, and everybody feels that things are getting more expensive. And we point fingers at each other when we just have to point fingers in one way at the central banks and at fiat money. It's sick. It's wrong. I'm tired of it. And I choose not to hold my value, the fruits of my labor, in something that can be weaponized against us.
You know, like I was just recalling, you mentioned at the top of the pod that your family were outfitters. So the hunters, they'd take people out hunting. I mean, it doesn't get much more proof of work than that. You can't fake that, you know, particularly I got couple of friends that are bow hunters, and you know, that's sort of next level kind of thing. You've really got to know your onions when you're doing that. And I'm talking like backcountry, you know, Montana. They've done solo hunts over there and things like that. And that kind of lifestyle really aligns with the fairness and the notion of work and all the things that sort of Bitcoin encapsulates. And then you've got this other side of things, which is just cheating, basically. It's like high fence hunting, you know, on a range that all the animals are fenced in, and you're pretty much guaranteed a kill, as opposed to you know, going home empty-handed, sort of thing. It's just baffling. And as you said, like, you know, when people have got a lot of shit going on, and the last thing they need to be thinking about is, you've got to have a reason, right? And it's usually after you've touched the stove, or maybe if you're lucky enough, you don't need to touch the stove. There are people out there that, you know, haven't had to, they can learn from others, so to speak. But, you know, it's hard. You've got to have an incentive, right? It's all about incentives at the end of the day. And so when you're out in the town square holding up the sign saying they're printing money and they're all fucking us, like, you have to understand that this is not cool. And people just look at you like a dog that's been shown a card trick. Yeah, it's disheartening, but they're gonna figure it out soon, if not later. And, you know, I just hope they don't all hate us for being so early. This is kind of the whole point of the pod too. Like, hopefully people can discover Bitcoin via discovering Bitcoin, and they can realize, oh, these people are like just curious individuals that just wanted to try and not get cheated and lied to anymore.
Right. Like, I'm not asking for much. Like, I just want the fruits of my labor to not decay over time. Like, I just want a fixed amount of units that no one can steal. Ask for much, really. Like, truly, I'm not asking for some unfair advantage. I'm just not, I just don't want to be robbed any longer, you know? Oh yeah. I just wanted to add, like, I had mentioned about my grandpa, you know, he had a real estate portfolio. And I mean, my whole family on both sides, we always like really regarded him as a, you know, really smart investor. And he retired early near Vancouver. And to be fair, we all do still respect him. But what I didn't realize at the time was he held hard assets from like the 1970s through until he passed away,
mm-hmm.
you know, and during that period, the money supply was expanded beyond belief. So long as it wasn't so much whether he chose the right properties or he had the right tenants or he did the right, as long as you held assets from that period, you earned on it. Right. And then to contrast that on my mom's side, my grandma, she was a single mother. And she worked at the hospital, at the University Hospital in Edmonton. And she did testing for like HIV and chlamydia and all that stuff. So she was in a lab, you know, doing these blood tests. She like would shuffle around vials and do the whole thing. Just a regular, honest job. And she never held any assets through that period. She bought her house and built it in the 60s, and she still lives in that house today. And like my whole life, she's been telling me like, man, the price of meat is going up. Man, the price of this is going up. Man, it raised our taxes again, you know? And now she's in, you know, she's in her, well in her 80s now. You know, her pension isn't going up as fast as the inflation, right? So here's like, I don't know if you've read that book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. But I kind of feel like I had that in my life. I had a rich dad who's like, you know, save your wealth and assets. At the time, I thought the only asset was real estate. And then I had another person who was just save your money in the bank. And the one retired early and, you know, had everything they ever wanted. And the other one was just, and to this day, is still can't understand why groceries are so expensive.
Yeah.
And she's not starving by any means. She has us and family and everything. But my point is that, you know, it's fucking people who don't know any better. It's not like you laid out the rules and this is the system. And in, you know, in school, we're going to tell you about, you know, how fiat money works and it's not pegged to gold and it's, you know, it's a credit-based system and these people get it first and they're going to invest it likely into assets. You should own assets. They don't mention that. They don't mention that at all. Right? They tell you at the bank, save your money. Work hard, save your money. She didn't do anything wrong. That's the thing that gets me. It's like, she didn't do anything wrong. A lot of people out there are doing the same thing. Blue-collar people, proof-of-work people. And what are they doing? They're going out and they're saving these shit tickets, this toilet paper that's degrading and making them go to a lower class and making the people that printed it go to a higher class. And it's disgusting and it needs to stop.
Oh, yeah.
And
it's gross. Man, it's just gross.
I get
gross,
so fired man. Up about it. Ugh.
But it is gross because, I mean, we had Daz B on a few episodes back and, you know, he's a pretty down home kind of fella. He's proof of work through and through. And, you know, he goes out and makes it his mission to try and educate, you know, wage earners to about Bitcoin, really. But it's just something. It's just gross that you can go and do an honest job, come home, squirrel a little bit of it away for a rainy day, only to come back to it and realize that it's worth, I don't know, 25% less, 50% less. You know, it's this is the whole point, right?
Yeah,
like you spend your day, you trade in your time, your energy for, as you said, these shit tickets, and then what are you supposed to do? Become a part-time investor, you know, look at the blue chips. No one has time for that, so they funnel their excess into some sort of ETF thing, whatever, and they just get reams of capital to just spew out wherever they want, and then all of the crappy malincentives that eventuate off of that. And at the end of the day, people just want to buy a steak and hang out with their kids on the weekend. It's I don't know. It's not hard, you know what I mean? But it's just got these greedy motherfuckers. 100%. And it's not even that they're necessarily consciously evil or even aware or mindful of the behaviors that they're engaged in. They're probably just playing the rules as the rules are set. And because they make the rules and they change them up at any point, you know, but then they turn around and they wonder why people crack the shits and go and burn stuff in the streets or protest this or whatever it else, you know, and then, I don't know, bring out the aliens. It's weird, man. It's just weird.
It's super weird. Super weird. You know, it's like that meme. It's like that meme. You know, you go to talk to somebody about it and there's a guy by the barbecue and it's like, cool, man. Did you watch the game this weekend?
Oh, that's my favorite meme.
He's like barbecue and a steak.
It's my favorite meme. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I didn't catch the circus and the bread this weekend that we're supposed to be watching and not paying attention to everything. Like, no. And like this weekend, we went to Stockholm this weekend to visit one of my missus' friends. And I was talking with her best friend, and she's like, she wants to be a neurosurgeon. Like, she's a smart girl, right? We start talking about all this stuff, and, you know, she said, like, inflation, and I'm, like, triggered, you know? So I started talking about Bitcoin, and she starts talking. I start saying, yeah, well, the inflation's caused by, like, a gross, you know, supply and units into the system, and it's pumping everything, and it's not, trickling down into our wages. Our wages are not catching up with the amount they're printing. And she's like, yeah, but like, what about, you know, buy, sell? And like, there's a lot of people that are coming to Sweden and therefore the prices of prop. It's like, yeah, that's totally logic. And those supply demand dynamics do make up a price. There's a buyer and seller for every price. I'm with you 100%. But I think what people are missing is, now imagine if like a million people showed up to Sweden. and wanted to buy a house. That's the amount of demand that's pouring into the system that's coming from nothing. It's originating. There's zero cost to create this demand. No proof of work was done to create this amount of money, and it's getting pummeled into scarce assets because the people that are doing this know that they should put it into scarce assets and not hold on to it. So yeah, everything, like, it would be like, okay, if we're in a fair market that's not manipulated, which we are in a market that's manipulated, but just bear with me, then yes, you would get like ebbs and flows of like some things going up in value, some things going down, and different market participants. But when you have healthcare, you have real estate, you have stocks, you have everything, like cost of living, groceries, meat, everything pumping, then it's not maybe the market participant's fault. Maybe it's the currency that it's denominated in that is failing. And I tried to explain this to her, and she's like looking at me like, yeah, maybe, you know, I'm like, and maybe I think so. And I'm like, pull out like her iPad and try to show her charts. And then her eyes just glaze over.
Yeah. It never works, man. It's hard. It's very hard. That's why I like, asking the final question, which we will get to another question. I just realized actually that, we've been rolling 45 odd minutes. It's cool. We haven't even got to the second question. This is great. It's hard, man. It's like, you know, I like Cedric Youngerman. We had him on the pod a few episodes back, and he's like, Bitcoin's cool and you should want to get some of this coolness. Like, just check it out, man. It's cool. It's cool. And leaves genius. It at that.
Genius.
Genius, like, man.
What
I love
great
it.
Orange pill technique. Just genius. It's cool.
It's just very cool. He's got that New Jersey accent or New York accent. I'm not sure exactly where he's from, but it's just rad. How has discovering Bitcoin changed you?
It's definitely lowered my time preference, like, noticeably. Hmm. I mean, I explained earlier, I was buying Harley and stuff, and just as fast, the way I looked at money is just work harder and make more of it so you could spend more, and then just hope the good times just keep rolling. And granted, I was, you know, young in my early 20s. I think a lot of people think that way. But now it's like, one of my favorite Bitcoin websites, and I'm in a Bitcoin meetup, and we have a great WhatsApp group, and, you know, I love sharing this website. It's called Bitcoin or Shit. Have you heard of this?
Yeah.
Bitcoinershit.com.
Great site.
So good. So, like, for those who don't know how it works, it's like you go in there and you press like this blue button, and it's like you could have bought an iPod Nano for $250 in 2014. Today, that would be worth $250,000 worth of Bitcoin. It's like, oh my God. And I can, like, when I push that button, it's like, I did buy that fucking GoPro Hero 2. Like, the actual item pops up. I bought, I'm like, oh my God, I wouldn't have to work anymore. You know, like, the amount of missed opportunity is like mind blowing. So, yeah, I mean, I'm definitely more frugal. I spend money on things that I value more than Bitcoin. So, family is huge for me. Spending time with loved ones. Like, we're getting married in September. I'm not going to spare on that. I'm getting, you know, my Canadian family and friends to meet my Swedish family and friends. I'm so grateful and happy for that. That is not a time to, you know, be cheap and stack sats, in my opinion.
No way.
But other than that, I can live on rice. I can't eat out as much. I can not buy like whatever brand name clothes. I'm good. I'll stack with the rest of that. That's how it's changed me. Lowered my time preference.
Lowered your time preference. Yeah, man. It's so cool because it just laser focuses you on what's important. And
yeah,
that you just spelled it out. It's family and it's time with them, you know?
Yeah.
And it sounds super cheesy, but it's like, it's what everybody strives for, man. It's just, you know, that they're the good times. It's just hanging out with your family, with your friends, spending time as you wish.
family's a scarce asset. I mean, you can make more family, yeah, but the family that before you, that came before you, they're scarce, man. You know, so
the issuance rate on families is like a lot slower than Bitcoin.
yeah, exactly. I know I want to respect your time. I have this, you know, in my phone, I have like this Bitcoin notes thing. And I just like, whenever something, I go for a run and I have like a Bitcoin thought that pops in my head, I like to jot it down. And I jotted this one down. It's a little bit angry, but I think it's worth saying. It's called A Letter to Central Banks and Government. And I would love to say it on your pod if you'd let me.
Yeah, man, let's roll. Go for it.
Sure. Okay. So, a letter to central banks and government. My grandma was a single mother who worked her whole life for a wage that bought her less and less. A retirement pension that is worth less and less. Due to an education that failed to mention any of this to her. She banked with a bank that told her to save her money so they could fractionalize lend it out at 10 to 1. Without her consent. Meanwhile, you printed more for yourselves to pay for overspending and vote harvesting. You force us to use a currency that is a piece of shit. Tax us in higher brackets. Lengthen our retirement age. Tax our salary and all goods and services we want to buy. Tax any profits we make. And tax whatever is left that we wish to pass on to our children. You manipulate markets. Print money to pay for wars that we do not want. And enrich yourselves. How about this? How about fuck you? How about I work as hard as I can and put the fruits of my labor into something you can't touch? Something scarce. Something that everyone can use. Something that you cannot stop. And if you want my Bitcoin from me, you'll have to provide me with a more value than I think it's worth, which is a hell of a lot. You'll have to compete for it via producing energy. Or pry it from my cold, dead fucking brain. There are many like me. We are peacefully walking away. And without us, your house of cards collapses. And there's nothing you can do to stop us. And if you don't like it, you can go fuck yourself. Yours truly, fiat is worthless.
Bravo, that's cool. You should write that down. Publish it somewhere, send it into Bitcoin magazine or something. That's great. It's just lays it out, man. It's like done, we're done. It's just nonsense. It's just nonsense, and we're gonna go and do this now. So, you know, see ya.
Yeah, it just bubbled up in me, and I tried to encapsulate it. I like to run, and man, I get some of my best thoughts, and I just got so angry that we didn't choose any of this, and it's tearing us apart, so needs to change. And I don't know if you've seen that. You've probably seen that meme where there's like a politician standing out on a plank over a cliff, and he's on his post, like shouting at a group of people that are all standing on the plank to support him. And then you just have this one laser-eyed Bitcoiner just stepping off the plank, walking away.
Yeah,
like just peacefully walking away. And there are many like me, like us, that are just, I don't want to talk to you about it. I'm just going to walk away, and I know that you're leveraged long fiat, and I'm just going to pull my energy out of that, and you're going to get margin called. It's all going to collapse. You're leveraged 10 to 1, right? Mm. Like if I don't participate, then it's the charade is over. Everyone can see that you're swimming naked. So that's what we're doing. And I'm so proud to be part of this community. So happy to be influenced by such a number of great thinkers like yourself, putting out podcasts. You know, I don't know if you do this full time, but you put a lot of work into this. This is proof of work. You do a great pod. All of your guests have been so good. Everyone's so willing to help each other. And I'm just so proud and happy to be a part of this group. And then I found Bitcoin.
It's such a gnarly community, like space. It's just full of really interesting individuals, you know. Like I'm yet to have a boring conversation with a Bitcoiner. Like seriously, I'm not even like on air on the pod. I'm talking at my local meetup, in various groups that I'm with, or little getaway things. We have this thing in Australia called the Bush Bash, which is just a really awesome weekend, hanging out with Bitcoiners. And yeah, I'm yet to have an uninteresting conversation with a Bitcoiner, because they come from all walks of life. You can't pick them out of a lineup. You know, I often think you're walking around the street or going up to the supermarket or something, and you could be walking past five of them. You know, you just wouldn't know, because, you know, unless they're wearing a Bitcoin t-shirt, like, you just, they just come from everywhere, and they're just like regular old people that are just trying to get on, and I've found this thing that they're interested in, they're curious about, they want to learn more about it, and and some of them have come to the realization that, yeah, like you just said, like, all right, I'm stepping off and I'm going to go over here now. And, you know, join me when you want to or whatever. I think Nick Carter even wrote a piece about that. It's like peaceful, what the fuck was it called? Oh, it's a good, great piece. It's something, peaceful revolution. I hate using the word revolution, though, when it comes to Bitcoin, because it implies that it will just sort of cycle back around. I like to think of it more like an evolution, and that we're going to, you know, evolve into something a little bit better. There's a really cool Bill Hicks line about institutions failing and stuff because they're no longer relevant, and that evolving... evolution didn't stop with us evolving opposable thumbs. You know, we've got a long way to go, and I think if we channel our energy into the right things, like Bitcoin, we can get there. You know, and we can explore the universe. It's just a matter of time, really. And I don't know, man. I love that. I love that letter. It's just, you could tell. You know, there was a lot of, it was visceral, you know, and I think that's a lot, that's how we all feel from time to time, particularly when you know, get exposed to sort of the corporate press every now and again. You turn on the radio or walk past the TV at your parents' house or something like that, and then you're watching garbage and you're just like, fuck, you know, but it's hard to keep it in, because it's like, it's just infuriating, you know. I mean, you could, you know, you run in the gravy train, you did back in the day, you know, and that's, I don't know, man. There's nothing wrong with all of that. Like, it's all a learning curve, and I don't know, man. Let's face it, you might not be talking to me if you had to listen to Marty. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I wish I had.
No, because then you're not talking to me, man. It's this is a good thing. You're on the right path.
That's true, yeah.
What have you learned about the world and yourself since discovering Bitcoin?
Man, big questions, heavy hitting questions. What have I learned about the world? Don't trust Verify, you know? The more I go down this rabbit hole, I can see the bullshit. And I think there's a lot of adults in a lot of rooms that just say tropes over and over again. I don't know if you've seen this clip of Jerome Powell, and he's asked why 2% is the inflation target.
Oh, yes.
And he's unable to say why the target should be 2%. This is arguably one of the most powerful people in the world, and he doesn't even understand where inflation... Well, he probably doesn't understand where inflation comes from, but he doesn't understand why there's even a target. Or that should be like textbook. He should be able to rattle that off with his eyes closed, and he stumbles like a fool.
Yeah, it's so disingenuous.
It's or he lies through his teeth, right? That's the target, you know, around the world, and everybody else does. Okay, so why does everybody else target 2%?
And you're like the Fed, setting the rates mostly for the world anyway. Most of them are in an echo chamber following whatever it is that you do. So I don't know. Explain. Why do you set it at 2%? Why? What's the magic number? Why is it 2% the magic number that's the amount you're going to like devalue the currency and effectively steal people's time and energy at 2%? You're gonna have to work 2% harder than you did last year and the year before that, and then we'll just compound that until it's zero. And like, fuck you.
Right. Like there is no justification for 2% of theft, you know? Like the crazy thing is, like, if we only steal from somebody 2% at a time, they notice, and frankly, it works. You know, if we just stole 25% at a time, people would get quite upset. But if we do it just slow enough, they won't riot. And it's like you're the frog in the water, just slowly being boiled, and you don't hop out. And I guess we're the frogs hopping out. We're the very sensitive skinned frogs that want to jump out of the pot.
Yeah, Jeff Booth's got like a cool metaphor with like a thief in the night coming in and stealing 2% of your stuff, and you don't notice it straight away. And you don't notice it for a little while until eventually you wake up and one morning like you've got nothing in your house anymore. And yeah, it's just so damn sneaky. You know, when you learn about the history of central banking, and particularly this John Maynard Keynes fella, who's just the most soy individual, like, I think that's ever lived. I'm pretty sure he had his good points. I'm sure lots of humans have their good points, but this guy, yeah, frustrating, man. It's kind of like, so you got Keynes, and then at the same time you got this Weston A. Price fella. No. Ansel Keys, those two. So you got, John Maynard Keynes and then Mises, and everyone listened to Keynes because, I don't know, like it aligned with their shitty incentives or something. And then you got that Ansel Keys guy that started, he didn't think that he started the Heart Foundation, but he basically was talking about, you know, polyunsaturated fats, monounsaturated fats, all that sort of stuff. And then this other fellow, Weston A. Price, is talking about just eating meat and, you know, animal protein and highly nutritious foods like that. And again, we veer down these paths that just lead to such crappy unintended consequences. It's, and then we're just trying to pack it all up and course correct, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, humans follow incentives, right? So we have some faults, we have some, good things about us, but, we're greedy. Ultimately, we have that as a part of us. People are greedy. They want to get more. They want to get something for nothing. You know, some of us more than others, but that's a fallacy. Fallacy of human nature. So when, you know, what's the old saying, like, absolute power corrupts absolutely. Mm-hmm. So whenever that there's human action that can manipulate a monetary policy, over time with the right amount of changes of hands, that power is going to be abused. So just like how we took religion out of politics, it's crazy because everybody in the Western world seems to agree that we should take religion out of politics. You know, we shouldn't have a monarchy and we shouldn't have a priest or a pastor at the top. We should have a democracy and we should separate church and state. But when it comes to money, we think, okay, well, we need the government to create the money and be in control of the quote unquote policy. It's like, and nobody ever says, like, shouldn't that be fixed? Shouldn't that be uncorruptible? Shouldn't nobody have access to that? And I think a lot of people assume that's how money works. There's only so much of it. If I make money, then it's taking from someone else. And, you know, they think it's like a very simple level, you know, or at least it's backed by gold. A lot of people to this day still think it's backed by gold, you know, and it's sick. Finally, we have the solution, you know, that nobody can change. And let's see. I think the incentives work. I think they've proven that they work. I think number will go up. in fiat terms, because fiat is infinite. Just like Luke Broyles says, it's like a ship that floats is worth an infinite amount of sinking ships. You know, like our ship floats and theirs are slowly sinking. So therefore ours will go up, will be priced in sinking boats. It will go up forever. Right. Because ours floats. So, that Luke Broyles is something else. What a mind. And, he's a really good young Bitcoiner. That's just taking the world by storm. But, so long as they keep printing, the price of Bitcoin denominated in their shit will go up. And if number goes up, then people like me who were looking, wondering why the stock market was hitting all-time highs during COVID and the real estate market was hitting all-time highs during COVID will say, oh, okay, so they're printing money and hard assets, scarce assets go up. What's the hardest asset? Oh, Bitcoin's surging. I want some of that. What is it? And that will just keep repeating over and over and over and over until this black hole of an asset, this networking network effect asset, will just software eats the world, take over the world. And eventually it will just keep going up and the house of cards will fall. And that's going to take time, but I'm ready and I'm here for it.
Yeah, it's just one of those things we got to. I don't know, man. I hope it's you know, I hope it's not as catastrophic, violent as I sometimes am led to believe. Particularly if I talk to someone like Eric Kaysen, who scares the shit out of me sometimes. Do you remember like an aha moment that you had? So you had those three touch points that you mentioned, you know, poor old Marty, or maybe rich old Marty, I don't know by this point. And then your MLM scammers. And then, you know, I mean, if you're gonna get orange pilled by someone, it might as well be Breedlove. I'm not one of those purity testing Bitcoiners. I could give a shit whether he sells a crappy hardware wallet on his podcast. It's not my business. I don't care. He had a pretty important hand in orange pilling me with some of his writing back in the day. But do you recall like an aha moment once you kind of were listening to those various pods or reading something else? Do you remember?
I think it was, the Breedlove pod was just like really high level. He's great for beginners. If anybody out there that's really just wants to know the basics, he goes on a lot of different platforms and talks to different people. I'd highly recommend him. But then, you know, the Sailor series is just so good. It's just like, he's so good at zooming in to the finest detail and technicality and zooming way out to like thousands of years ago, you know, on a whim.
Yeah.
And he describes these things like so eloquently, and the way that he walks through how, you know, time and energy is money, you know, and how, you know, from the Stone Age all the way up through to today, humans harnessing energy to advance their civilization, you know, whether it's through, you know, hydraulic energy, gravitational energy, you know, kinetic energy. Like he's talking about like bow and arrows, like how a bow is pulling back and you're having kinetic energy through a bullet, and how that changed the whole world. A bow and arrow changed the whole world. Or how a hawk comes down and grabs a goat and throws it down a mountain to get its prey and uses gravitational energy as an advantage. So what is money? Money is humans channeling energy, and it's the medium of energy at its highest form. It's the highest liquid energy that we can use because it's used as a medium of exchange, as a store of value, and it is energy into the future, right? So we do proof of work, Preferably, we get money, and into the future, we expect to use this energy, this money, to purchase goods or services in exchange for our time and energy that we expended to acquire it, right? And he explains this so eloquently, and I just, if I had one wish, I wish everybody, and I've tried to get people to listen to this, it's just too tough for people. But if you can go out there, listen to that Sailor series from start to finish. If you're not interested in it after that, I mean, maybe you need a few more touch points, but man, it just got me so hooked. I probably listened to that series 10 times in a row. Like, it's so great. So great. And that was probably my biggest aha moment. I just couldn't get enough of Sailor. He's just such a brain.
Yeah, he's got a real great way of articulating those intuitive thoughts in your brain that rattle around, and you're just like, oh, that's it. There you go. Yeah. He's got a way. Yeah, hats off. All right. Well, then, last question. And we've touched on this a little bit throughout the conversation, but how do you explain Bitcoin?
How do I explain Bitcoin? Yeah, Bitcoin is just money. It's the best form of money ever discovered. It is a scarce asset. It's 21 million. It's a distributed network of nodes. It's a peer-to-peer payments network. It's a store of value, medium exchange. It is a proof of work asset on a fixed schedule where you have to provide energy to the network that provides security, and an exchange at random. There can be reward of a fixed amount of Bitcoin, and that's the issuance schedule, and everybody can participate in this. And what's happening is there's a group of incentives that are aligned, that a miner is incentivized to find electricity at a cheap price anywhere in the world. Whoever has the lowest cost to produce a block has a better chance at getting the block reward. So what's happening is it's an organism that's going around the globe finding stranded and cheap energy. And in the same time, it's building out the energy grid and providing more energy to people around the world that wouldn't normally have access to this power, because, you know, it's putting a price, a minimum price on power. You know, that's one of the things that, you know, you asked me how I changed about how Bitcoin changed me. And one thing I thought is, like, all energy is created equal. Power is power, you know? Okay. But not all energy is created equal, I've found. So if you have an island like Iceland, let's say there was nobody on Iceland. I love Iceland, by the way. And you had all of this geothermal. Traditionally, that power would be worthless because nobody wants to buy it, because there wouldn't be anybody for, you know, 1,000 kilometers in every direction. So there, that is electricity, energy, and geothermal energy that nobody wants. So the price of that power is zero. The only way that it's valuable is if somebody wants to buy it, right? So traditionally, what people would do is they'd say, okay, well, we're going to build a, you know, an aluminum plant or something and put it there, and then we're going to ship that aluminum from where we made it to somewhere else, okay? Until, you know, you go and invest a bunch of, you know, you invest all this money to build the aluminum smelting plant, and then the geothermal energy stops, and then you can't move this power plant, and it creates all of these logistical issues and all of this risk for people to invest the money to take advantage of the cheap energy, right? So in a lot of cases in Africa, South America, there's just not a market to harness this energy, right? So what Bitcoin does is, if you have cheap electricity, you can mobilize a C-CAN full of miners and set up there, produce the energy off of a hydroelectric dam or off a set up a small turbine, burn flared gas and natural gas, and you can monetize energy anywhere in the world. So you take power that's worth zero is now worth something. And it's worth quite a lot because Bitcoin is worth quite a lot. So what happens when we monetize all of the energy that's, you know, solar energy, geothermal energy, hydroelectricity, you know, they're doing like, you name it, flare gas. I've heard of people burning tires to get electricity. They're doing this ocean, I can't remember the guy's name, from Hawaii Bitcoiner, Nate Hawaii, I think on Twitter. They're going and they're taking advantage of the arbitrage in temperature of cold water and hot water in the middle of the Pacific near the equator. So somehow they're cycling a heat exchange through a turbine and they're creating electricity. What happens when you harness all the electricity along the equator in the middle of the ocean? I think that's pretty powerful. And it escapes me the name of the process, but it's really interesting. It's, you know, so one thing, it's like what changed me is like people saying, well, Bitcoin's going to take all of the power of the world. Well, the power that's near us, you know, power being generated near a city is being the price is being bid by all the people that need the power. So you're getting like 14 cents a kilowatt hour or whatever. Bitcoin mining does not target power that's near city centers. They're not interested in that. That is not a very profitable endeavor to go after 14 cents per kilowatt hour power. They're looking for like zero stuff that nobody's using, right? They want to go to a hydroelectric dam in Africa, and they want to hook up to that and be super profitable, and also maybe provide power to the communities that don't have electricity. I think that's pretty equitable. I think that's a pretty reasonable endeavor. So one thing I learned is not all power is created equal. And that's just another thing that we don't learn in school. We don't understand how the grids work. We don't understand why is the price of power so cheap, and why is, like, none of that is communicated to us. And just like Bitcoin, Gigi says, Bitcoin does 1,000 things before breakfast, something along the lines of that. And it's like, if we forget a scarce asset, forget peer-to-peer payments, forget the light, like forget all that, just energy, what it can do for energy. What's happening is the energy sector is molding into the mining sector. They're joining, right? You're going to have mining companies buying energy companies. You're going to have energy companies buying mining companies. What happens when they have zero wasted energy on a wind farm? Every wind turbine has a Bitcoin miner in the bottom of it. What happens when every solar farm has a C-CAN full of miners beside it? You know, instead of storing big huge containers of oil or natural gas in big tanks, they just go and use it to mine Bitcoin. Like you're making an industry that's arguably one of the biggest industries in the world more efficient by an order of magnitude. And in turn, that's making the network that I want to send money from here to Australia more secure on a level that even if every computer in the world, every military, every country, every company, Amazon, Google, turned all of their computers towards Bitcoin and tried to take over the network, it wouldn't even make a dent. It would embarrass them. That's how strong this network is. So people are like, oh, so they might hack Bitcoin. They might. No, they won't. Because the incentives are so strong for people to profit from mining, that just turns around and strengthens the network security so much that there is no second best.
It's just crazy. Like, there's so many different portals that you can move through, rabbit holes you can go down, and like energy is one of those ones that, like a couple of years ago went down a bit of a energy rabbit hole and bought the Vaclav Smil Energy and Civilization, and you know, what's his guy's name, Alex, Alex Epstein, his book, or his two books. It's nuts, man. This thing is just wild. It's just wild. And I don't know, even if it doesn't make you wealthy or provide any more optionality other than just intellectual curiosity, I'm good. Like, I'm good. It's just so damn stimulating.
Yeah, there's this question that someone asked Michael Saylor. They said, what did you find on your journey to the bottom of the rabbit hole? And Michael Saylor replied, immortality. It's like, whoa. I mean, truly, like, this is energy. This is money that you can transport, not 10,000 kilometers away. It's like 10,000 years away. This is immortal energy. This is immortal money. This is permissionless. You can't touch it. You know, you can time lock. Just the idea of time locking capital into the future.
Oh, yeah.
Unparalleled. I mean, we've never had anything like this. This is something that's so important. It's going to change the world so viciously that, I guess I get not overwhelmed. I'm like so hopeful, all the benefits. I bought my dad a copy of the Bitcoin Standard. I want to get all the people I love. I've been shouting it more at them than just random people. It's like a lifeboat. I want to get them on the lifeboat. I want to get them interested. I haven't had much success. I think I've only orange-pilled a few people. But it's awesome. And there's tons of Bitcoiners out there. You know, start a meetup. Start a pod. You know, talk to people about it. Meet people where they are. You know, they start talking about cost of living, inflation. Talk to them about it. Why do you think that is? How does money work? Why do you think that is? And how are we going to fix it? You know, and tell them that you're a Bitcoiner, you know, and hey, maybe it's really cool. You should think about learning about it. It's really cool. And Cedric's such a genius. Cedric's the man. He's so good. That's such a good line. I'm totally going to use that.
Oh, yeah. I've been using that. Since he told me, I was like, all right. I think he actually stole it from someone from the Bitcoin Policy Institute. I can't remember the guy's name, but it's always Cedric's the one that told me, so it's always Cedric that I'm gonna always have to hat tip each and every time I use that line. It's just Bitcoin's cool, man, and you should want to get some because it's cool. It's kind of like, I don't know, Nirvana's Nevermind or something. When it come out, you're just like, "This is cool, man. You should put it on, listen to it. It's cool."
It is cool. Bitcoin's cool.
Yeah. Fiat is worthless. This has been an awesome, epic rip. We've got impassioned. We've got some stuff off our chest. I think this is just part of the reasoning behind this pod was just like a little bit of cheap therapy for me to be able to just talk to sane individuals and be like, oh yeah, cool. I'm like not too crazy. Just crazy enough, which is fantastic. It's like we watched One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest the other week, and there's a line in there, Jack Nicholson's trying to throw a bathroom sink through a wall or something, and he fails at it, but he walks out of the room, he's like, I tried, goddammit. At least I tried. And that's just how I feel.
That's all we can do. Yeah, you're doing a great job, by the way. I was like, man, I think I've listened to 75% of your pods, man. You do a good job, and all the guests you've had on, this community is so cool. I just I can't get enough. So good on you, and thank you so much for having me. I just really appreciate this opportunity.